Okay, so we'll start from the bottom of Chavav Omad Bet, 26b. Very fascinating cases, which take us all the way to the end of the Gemara, to the end of the Perek, rather. So very, very Gemara-type cases, in the sense that we go through, they're very, a bit gory, the cases, in many ways. But obviously, you know, we focus on them as theoretical things. And also very, very... you know, the Gemara likes to take extreme cases as well, you know, to help us sort of really take it almost. I was thinking recently that, you know, you always grow up with the Gemara, in a sense, being the place which comes up with the most crazy scenarios, you know, the ones that you never think happen. And maybe it's just me, but I feel like more and more in life, life is becoming a bit sort of, you know, like you could never ever think that this is going to happen. You know, this is crazy. This is what the nuttiest thing that you ever would have come up, and actually that's what happens in real life. So there you go. Okay, let's start with, so we'll go four or five lines from the end, the last word on the line, fifth last line for Omar Rabba. I think all the last cases are basically going to be quotes from Rabba. They're all sort of Rabba's teachings, and we'll sort of analyze them briefly in the Gemara and see how we go. Very fascinating, although, as I say, obviously, you know, if the cases were to happen, very, very distressing cases. But so we'll leave that element aside as we go through them. V'amar Rabba, Zorak Tinok Meirosh Hagag, somebody who throws a baby from the top of a roof. And again, remember that this is now the second. The reason it's V'amar Rabba is because this is the second in a series, right? He's already started. He gave a similar one, similar case earlier where he talked about Zorak Kli Meirosh Hagag, if you throw a vessel, a utensil from the top of the roof and someone smashed it on the way down. So now we're taking it that step further and say, what about if it was a child, not a utensil, but actually a baby, throw it from the roof. And as it's falling, someone else kills it with a sword on its way down. So now we're not talking about nezek damages payments, right? We're talking about death penalty, right? We're talking about death penalty. And as we've mentioned in the past, the death penalty is either on or off, right? It's either a yes or a no, very straightforward. So when it says potter over here, it doesn't mean you've done nothing wrong and everything's fine, right? It just means you're not going to get the death penalty, right? Clearly you've thrown a child off the roof. That's a terrible thing to do. And there'll be consequences to face down here and upstairs in heaven as well. So someone else kills it finally with as it's falling with the sword. Plug to the Rabbi Yehuda ben Basera v'Rabbanon. Maybe this is similar to the machlokas that we've actually seen this earlier on. I can't remember if it was this parak or last parak, but it will sound familiar as we do it. D'tanya, as we learnt in a brisa, hikuhu asara bnei adam. If you have 10 people who attack one other, and the 10 people hit him, but asara maklos. So each person comes with a stick and hits him once, right? And he dies as a result of that. So it's bein bevas achas, bein bezachazeh. Whether it's all in one go, they all hit together in unison, or it's bezachazeh, one after another. Kulon paturin. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Basera's opinion, that's the Rabbanon's opinion. The Rabbanon's opinion is that they're all exempt, and Rashi spells out, because deba'inan shayake kol nefesh adam. The Torah uses the phrase kol nefesh adam, the entire person, and therefore, you know, you can't pin it on any one individual of them. And therefore, they're going to be all exempt. Rabbi Yehuda ben Basera, Omer Rabbi Yehuda ben Basera says, bezeach arzeh ha'acharon chayev. If it's one after another, then the last one will be liable. Mipnesha kirev misasa, because he brought the death closer. Yes, clearly all of them are, in a sense, causing the death, but the last one was the one who actually brought it the closest. He was the one who actually made it happen in that moment. And therefore, he's going to be liable according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Basera. I think actually, we didn't see this at the time. Maybe we did. But I'm pretty sure that we have over here an interesting debate as to whether, according to the Rabbanon, who say... whether we say... Yeah, okay, I don't remember. I think the question... According to the Rabbanan, let's just say it in principle, because I can't actually find who says what. But in theory, you can look at this in two ways. When the Rabbanan say that you're exempt for the 10 people are exempt, are they getting off on a technicality in a sense? Is that because we can't tell which one of them, which was the blow that actually caused the death? Or is it because Rashi seems to be saying a much stronger thing. Rashi seems to be saying it's sort of, you know, inherent in the idea of the death penalty is that you have to be kol nefesh adam. It has to be pinned on one person specifically. But maybe if you could sort of technically separate them out, one could argue against Rashi. One could argue differently and say that that actually, you know, if we could isolate one of these blows that actually caused the death, then maybe the Rabbanon would agree with Rabbi Yehuda ben Basira. So, as I say, we'll leave that as a, that I'm pretty sure that's a debate, but at least two ways to approach it.
Because it must be, in order for there to be murder, you've got to have the action for the murderer causing the death. And if it didn't cause the death, I mean, for example, with the baby.
But you can have multiple people causing a death.
But with the baby,
with the baby falling down is different. With the baby falling down,
clearly the guy who threw it didn't cause the death.
Yeah, you're right. So you're right. Sorry. So according to this Gemara is basically saying you're right. Okay. Maybe that's an interesting question. Actually, you see, according to this Gemara seems clear that we do know in this case who caused the death, and yet still, according to the Rabbanan, they're exempt. That's what the Gemara is suggesting. The Gemara is suggesting that this case of Rabba is.
But that's not the same as the baby falling, because the baby falling, you know that the throwing didn't cause the death.
Yes, that's what I mean. Exactly. And yet still we're suggesting that this is subject to the debate of the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda ben Basira. That's a very good point, actually.
That's the difference of opinion.
Yeah, maybe.
That's
a very good point. It's a very good point. Okay, so I'll have to look that up. Yeah, that's a very interesting very interesting question. Okay, excellent point.
So the dispute has not been resolved.
Well, we generally follow the Rabbanon. We generally follow the majority opinion. Yeah. Well, we're not trying to resolve this exactly. Yeah, exempt from the death penalty. As right. I say, they're clearly all bad people and have but in terms of the death penalty, yeah.
Nobody is guilty.
Yeah, that's what it sounds. It seems like. Also, I mean, you'll see the whenever you have the little letter. If you look back on Chof Vav and Bet, right after the word Detanya, Hikuhu has a little resh on the top of it. Do you have that as well?
Yeah.
So that's the reference to the Shulchan Aruch. That's always the reference to the Halacha. So usually, where that letter appears is usually an indicator as to which opinion the Shulchan Aruch is going to side with. So that's on the first opinion, it seems to be over here. I mean, we can look it up as well. It's in the. You'll see it in the. It's called the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. It appears in the top right or the top left, basically in the far further corner of the outer corner of the page, and you'll see a little. Yeah, you'll see. So the Reish is the very last one, and it says it's in the Rambam. Okay, so the Rambam. It doesn't have a Shulchan Aruch over here, but the Rambam in Perek Dalet Halacha Vov of Hilchos Rotzeach. Which would be in a Nezikin, his Nezikin section. Maybe we'll look it up afterwards. So he seems to side with the Rabbanon. Okay. Actually, maybe let's pull it out now because he may have. I'm going to. Oh, we got one here. Okay, perfect. He may spell out what we were just saying. Sometimes the Rabbanon gives a bit of extra reasoning. What did we say? Perek Vav, I think, is it? Perek Dalet. All right, Dalet. So the Rambam says, Hikuhu hasara b'nei adam, ba'asara maklos, well, mace, so again, same thing. You know, 10 people with 10 sticks, and he dies. Bein shehikua bezer chazer, bein shehikua ka'achas, kulon peturin, mimisas beistin. Shene'emar kol nefesh adam. So everybody's exempt. And again, he quotes this verse. Adji echad sheharag kol ha'nefesh. V'hu adin l'shnaim. Okay, yeah, so he goes on to add other cases, which I guess we don't have. So he says, let's say two people push someone off a cliff or something like that. Again, the same thing. So again, when you're joining together, it has to be one person, basically. One individual in order to be liable for the death penalty. Always has to be one individual. Okay, so that's our Gemara. But again, we're going to see. By the way, the cases are going to get even crazier. There's very fascinating cases are going to come. We're going to come to. So now that's talked about the case of murder, right? But what about a case of damage? So we had already a case of damages on a case of damages in the sense of a utensil, damaging utensil. But what about if you have an animal? Your animal is the one that causes the death, possibly. So bush, sure, the third line down, or second, third line down, on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. Boshur v'kiblo b'karnov. So as the child is falling, now it's gored by an animal. And again, it sounds like it's an intentional thing. The animal is goring. It's not just an accident as it's walking along, but Rashi says boshur muad. So you know, there's an element of almost, you know, the animal sort of sees it falling and charges to catch it on its horns. And then, obviously, the child dies. So then, plugta de Rabbi Shmuel, beno shel Rabbi Yochanan, ben Broka. So that's all his name. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan, the son of Broka. Verabonon. So that's his, he has a debate between Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbonon. Why? Detanya, as we see over here. We're going to quote a Brisa to explain that this is also the subject of debate. Detanya, venosan pidyon nafsho. So the Pasuk says, Venosan Pidyon Nafsho, this is presumably also in Mishpatim. So again, this is to do with an animal killing a human being, right? Your animal, to what extent you're liable, what are you liable for? Demei Nizak. So basically the question is, who is the, when you say Pidyon Nafsho, right? Pidyon Nafsho is basically saying that there's an amount to pay based on his soul. So who's the he, right? Who is the he? Are we talking about Demei Nizak or Demei Mazik? Are we talking about the person who caused the owner of the animal, right? Or are we talking about the person who died, right? Rabbi Shmuel ben so Demei Nizak, Rabbi Shmuel ben, that seems to be the opinion of the Rabbanon. But Rabbi Shmuel ben Oshel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch Omer, he says, no, Demei Mazik, really, it's based on the based on the actual, you know, person who owns the animal, and therefore it's, you know, the one who causes the damage. That's the that's the key. And Rashi spells out for us. Rashi explains that that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, you would be liable in this case, right? The owner would pay because clearly. That's the Shalom Kofet, right? But according to the Rabbanon, who says that the whole thing is based on the Nizak, on the damaged party, so here there is nothing to, you know, it's already the baby's already falling, the child is already falling in a sense, so there is no Demei Nizak in quite the same way, and therefore you'd be exempt. So that's the way the Gemara seems to size up this case, that basically it falls under the same debate as Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanon. According to Rabbi Shmuel, who seems to focus more on the mazik, on the damaged person, on the damager, the owner of the animal, so he would say that the owner of the animal in this case would be liable to pay, right? Whereas according to the Rabbanon, who seems to focus on the damaged party, in this case the party who, you know, who died, then he would be exempt in this particular case, right? Be exempt. Because, again, he's already falling. He's already falling. Okay?
This is talking about damages rather than about
death penalty. Death. Well, because you don't get death penalty if your animal... Well, you can get a death penalty, possibly, if your animal goes, but usually you're going to be paying damages if your animal's...
But why is there an assumption that actually the child's... There's no damages payable in respect of the death of the child.
Well, presumably that would be the same. We would be going back to a similar idea of the vessel, in a sense, of the utensil.
But
The commentary here is that a child has no value.
Yeah, once they're fallen. Sorry, that's an important point. When we're talking about nezek damages, right, it's talking about the value of a person as their... So it's an interesting question, actually. I think there are...
Because
it's... I don't think that's the point. That's what it's saying?
I didn't go that far.
No, I think it's talking about because it's falling to its death. That's the point, that the life, in a sense, is already... there is already a guarantee. It's almost like a trefa. I think this is what we're saying. It's not quite like a trefa. One second, let me see if I can find the... Because there's an interesting debate.
So if you've got a man who's got a family...
I think the same thing would apply. No, I think the same thing would apply.
Because his dead's got no value. So you wouldn't have to pay damages.
Well, once they're dead, they're dead. What do you mean?
Rashi explains that according to the opinion, the ransom payments are assessed according to the value of the victim. The owner of the ox will be exempt in this case, as the child thrown off the roof had no monetary value at the time he was gored.
Yes, because he was falling from the roof. I think that's the key point. The key point is that presumably the person who was on the top of the roof would have to pay.
We're not looking at liability for murder. We're looking at liability for compensation.
But it's the same. I mean, they're linked to each other. But yes, you're right. Again, when you say in all these cases, I want to be totally clear, as we've said throughout, nobody suggests, the Gemara is not getting into a discussion, and it seems pretty clear that both parties are at fault, in a sense, right? I guess as the owner of the animal, I don't know what you're supposed to do, but clearly the person who threw the child off the top, right, doesn't, they're, whatever... We're talking about the technicalities of liabilities over here. So yes, in terms of a death penalty, there would be no death penalty for the first one. In terms of a payment, so there wouldn't be a payment for the first one, presumably, actually, because there it's a person who's pushed. Let's say it's nofel. Actually, it doesn't really matter. In the first case, whether it's someone through or the child is falling. Let's say the child is already falling. Let's say it fell on its own. Okay, let's just to make it simpler. It fell on its own. So and this animal comes to gore. So there'll be the question is, the question is, does the owner pay? In this particular case, so if you are assessing the damage, if the damages are assessed based on the value of the person falling, then the child that is currently about to hit the ground is assessed to have there's nothing there, is about to be killed anyway.
But that would apply to the father.
Correct, to a father, exactly. Yeah. By the way, the actual value, the halachic technical value, is not really assessed either. Based on we don't value an individual and say that this is their actual worth. It's a standard payment. It's a standard age. Payment. Yeah, it's a standard age related payment, basically. And there's no real, like, you know, if it was the greatest righteous scholar in the world and some terrible individual, it's the same. I'm pretty sure it's the same standard payment, regardless.
Was there actually a death penalty at this time?
At the Gemara's time, no. The Gemara's time, no.
So it's all theoretical.
I guess so. I mean, the Gemara. The Gemara never.
The bottom cards agree with each other. Presumably, the death penalty would be carried out anyway, because they
would not be. Yeah, there's so many reasons why it wouldn't be. But there is no death penalty in this case. We're talking about damages in this particular case. In the original death penalty. Yeah. I don't think there was ever. Even in a case where you do agree to the death penalty, there's still many, many get-outs, you know, many, many reasons why a death penalty is not enacted in practical terms. It was pretty unusual. The Gemara describes sometimes once in 70 years, you know, you'd have a death penalty. Clearly, people are. By the way, I think we should find that actually for the tshuva in the afternoon. I'm pretty sure Reb Shlomo Zalman. Let's write this down. I think Reb Shlomo Zalman Erbach has a tshuva about the misconception because obviously in America there's like, you know, voting, people vote, so, you know, so people, so there's a misconception that, that, you know, because the Torah talks about a death penalty, so it means Judaism is pro death penalty and therefore people should vote. So I think he discusses that in the Shiva, the misconception there. But maybe I'm, well, maybe I've misremembered that. I will try and find that. Okay, what I was going to say, so what they don't discuss here, and what I actually had hoped to look up and didn't have time, is what is, when we talk about, it's an interesting, there is a concept in halacha of what we call a treifa, right? A treifa, an animal, if you shecht an animal that is a treifa, right? We use the word treif sort of colloquially to mean anything that's not kosher, but it actually has a very specific halachic meaning. What it means is that the animal is unwell enough that it will die within a year. That's why, for example, check the animal's lungs. Right, so if you find a hole in the lungs, then the animal would have died within a year. And therefore, when you shechted it, it was considered to be a treifa, and therefore it's not no longer, and therefore it's not kosher. So, in order to be a treifa, they do distinguish between something that's internal and something that's external, i.e. something that's part of the animal as opposed to something... So, let's say, the Gemara doesn't discuss it here, but I remember thinking about this as I was talking about it, and I don't know if there's a Gemara that discusses it. Let's say an animal falls off a roof, and as it's coming down, you know, a very skilled shochet manages to shecht it as it's falling, right? So now, clearly, the animal's going to die within a year because it's about to hit the ground, right? So there's no, but it's not really a treifa because in and of itself, it's a perfectly healthy animal, right? It's a perfectly healthy animal in and of itself. It's just falling. So there, I don't think we would call that a treifa. So it's interesting over here, we do seem to say that the value is lost because it's about to hit the ground. Here we do take into account the fact that the external circumstances, as it were, right? The child in and of themselves is perfectly healthy, nothing wrong. You'd assume that they do have that that same monetary value,
extrinsically
not
a body falling at velocity,
yes,
towards a hard, unyielding surface. I mean, that's also part of the content. I mean, there's a patent. Yeah, it's pretty patent, but actually there's a limit to the survivability.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Supposedly there was a lake
cushion. Well, we had that earlier where the Gemara talked about throwing a jug off and someone removes the cushions that are there. You throw the jug off the you throw the vase off the top of the roof,
yeah,
and then someone removes the cushions.
What's safety,
as it falls. Right. So, you know. Yeah. Yeah, but I just I think my only point was that it's interesting to, the Gemara doesn't give that case, but it would be interesting to see whether that would be. I think that's what we would say. I think there would be a distinction between the two, that a treifah does require something more intrinsic.
So you'd be able to eat it.
Yeah, yeah. Theory. If you have this very skilled shochet who shechts it on its way down. Okay.
And then squashed by the ox falling on top of it.
Right. Right. Well, okay, squashed by a person falling on top of them. This is exactly where the Gemara is going. The next case is, honestly, like I say, only gets more unbelievable as we go through. V'omar Rabba. Okay, ready for this one. V'omar Rabba. Nofal Mirosh Agag. A man falls. It's amazing to. I don't know exactly how you imagine this scenario, but clearly he's not wearing any clothes or anything. V'niska Be'isha. So he penetrates a woman, right? I'm not sure you can even call it having sex, but that's what it's talking about. But it's clearly as he falls, right? So penetrates a woman as he falls. So, and clearly does some damage as well, right? Understandably. So then, chayev bedaled dvarim. So you are you're liable. He's considered liable in that case, right? Because he was standing on the edge of. He clearly is liable for standing on the edge of the roof in a place that was unsafe. Rashi says nofal beruach mitsuya. It wasn't a hurricane. There was no particular force that pushed him off unexpectedly or anything like that. It was a normal thing, right? He fell in a way that should have been anticipated, and therefore he is considered to be liable for these. Dalid Dvarim, right? Or for all regular damage payments for an individual. But again, amazing. There's lots of different parameters or lots of different ramifications, I should say, of this. Ubiyavimto, so here's an amazing thing. Okay, so when you're talking about yibum, give a little background to yibum, right? So yibum is, well, you can see where we're going. Oh, you've looked ahead. Okay, to see where we're going. So yibum is where there are two ways where you do yibum. I guess just for the recording, we'll give the background. The yibum is where one man is married and dies without children. So then there's a mitzvah to do yibum, where his brother will marry his wife, right? He's now died, and the brother will marry his wife. We, in practice nowadays, always do chalitza. It's one of the cases in the Torah. I actually remember this as a quiz question, but I can't remember the other example. I can remember one other example, but I think someone once asked, "What? There are a number of times in the Torah where the Torah actually gives you an option. It's very unusual to have an option in the Torah. You're either told you do X or you do Y, but in certain cases, you have a genuine option. You can do yibum or you can do chalitza. You choose, right? Which one you do? There are a couple of other options. I can't remember all of them. as I say, in practice nowadays, we always do chalitza. We still practice that. It's obviously a Torah halacha, and that's what we always do. But it's a very fascinating halacha, and this is what we'll see. And actually, I'll mention this in just a moment. It's important to come back to this, that without this specific halacha of yibum, it is us, that union is completely forbidden, and the child would be considered a mamzer, right? It's a very strong halachic, it is a full Torah prohibited marriage. You cannot marry your brother's wife even after he dies, right? So again, for example, if a man has children and then dies, his brother cannot marry his wife, right, at that point. It's a very strong forbidden relationship, but with a specific exception where it suddenly becomes a mitzvah with yibum. So one way in which you become, and this is, by the way, in general marriage, we're very used to our marriages. We do with what we call kesef kiddushin. You give the ring, and that's the way that we get married. But there are other ways to get married. In theory, being intimate is also a way to get married. Now, again, the reason we don't do that is you need to do that with witnesses and things like that. You know, the whole, in the same way that you do, in the same way that we have a chuppah. So obviously we don't, multiple reasons why we don't do it in that way. But in theory, a union, an intimate union is a marriage. And the same thing with yibum, the way that you actually cause the yibum to happen is through that sexual act. So what about in this case, right? Let's say the woman happened to be the wife of his brother who just died. So now, are they now considered to be married, right? But it says no. So the Gemara says, uviyavim talo kona, right? Uviyavim talo kona. So even though he is liable for the damages, you're not going to... it's not considered a yibum union. Rashi spells out, af al pishe shoninu, even though we have taught, habo al yavimto, bein shogeg bein mezid kona, even though in yibum we say it's whether it was intentional or not, right? Whether it was intentional or not. I'll come back to what intentional means in just a moment. Honimili, when it says it's unintentional, even that is considered to be a yibum union. Honimili hecha deniskavin lebias isha acheres. Right. So, Rashi spells it out. Actually, I didn't remember Rashi saying this specifically. So Rashi says, what is unintentional? How do you do this unintentionally? He says, no, you thought it was somebody else. Right. Let's say you thought it was somebody else, and actually, it turns out it was your brother's wife. Right. You thought it was a dark room. So that's still considered to be a yibum union, and yet, despite that, aval zel lo niskaven l'shembia, over here he had no intention for any intercourse whatsoever, and therefore lo kona, therefore it doesn't count as any sort of yibum union. Avim chozar ochar ve'osa echad min ha'achin, v'im chozar ve'osa echad min ha'achin bo maimar psola olav. So, okay, I'm not sure exactly what that's referring to, but I think it's basically talking about, let's say, as another brother, as to what extent someone else can now come along and do yibum, because the yibum can be done by any of the brothers, right? In principle, the yibum can be done by any of the brothers.
Is there a pecking order then?
I believe there is. It's quite complicated. There's a natural pecking order, but in theory, if you go ahead and do it, then... I think you can technically jump the pecking order. It's not like a pecking order of inheritance or something else.
Without chalitza,
yeah,
and the woman remarries or has a child anyway, that child would be a mamzer?
No, I don't believe so. Wouldn't be a mamzer. Mamzer, only if she was married at the time. She's definitely not considered married, but there is considered to be. I think the Gemara uses the term azika. There's like some sort of connection between her and the brother until he. No, it's not a mamzer, but it's not a good thing. Yeah, you should do it before you get married. I'm pretty sure. Okay, so, but so I'm pretty sure Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, very fascinating, where, it's amazing because you just take these cases further and further and further. Moshe says over here, so the Gemara is very clearly stated that this is not considered to be a Yibum union, but let's make it even crazier. Let's say a child is born from this. Man falls off the roof, right, penetrates a woman, and somehow, a child is born from that. So, Is that child now mamzer? Because if it's not a yibum union, then it's correct. Then it's a brother. You're having a child with your brother's wife. So then maybe the child's a mamzer. I think he says not, but a very fascinating trivia sort of goes into why that's the case. Yeah, okay, why that's the case. Fine. Lo kona chayev. And if Rav Moshe is talking about it, there must be some practical ramification because his trivas are always very it's not like a Gemara scenario to sort of help us theorize. But Rav Moshe is presumably responding to something very practical, possibly to do with artificial insemination, which is obviously a big topic that he discussed. Okay, so now the Gemara goes on. Chayev benezek b'tzar beripui. So you're liable for nezek, for tsar, for the pain caused, for beripui, for the doctor's bills, besheves, for time off work, but aval boshes lo, but you're not liable for embarrassment, for the payment of embarrassment. Why? Ditnan, because boshes particularly has a specific criteria. Ditnan ein chayv al haboshes ad sheyehem miskaven. Boshes specifically, you need to have full intention to cause embarrassment. We'll see now that it doesn't mean you have intention to cause embarrassment, but you have some sort of intention. So let's just see. Let's say you fall off the wind you fall off the roof in a storm. Right, so unusual wind. You weren't doing anything particularly. You were sort of close-ish to the edge, but you were blown off. You were blown off the edge by a very, very strong wind. So it's much less your fault. Vehizik ubiesh, and you cause damage and you embarrass them. Chayev al hanezek. So there, you're still liable for nezek. Why? Because as we've said in the past, a person is always liable for themselves. The nezek payment has a very low threshold. You're always considered to be somewhat liable for your body, for any damages that's done by your body. But upotar b'dal advarim, you're going to be exempt from the other four things because there you have to have a bit more intention to cause damage. Beruach metzuya, but when it's a regular wind, something you should have been able to foresee, vehizik, and you cause damage, ubiyesh, and you embarrassed, chayv b'dal advarim, upotar al haboshes. As we've said until now, right? You're liable for these first four things, but you're exempt from boshes, from the embarrassment. Why? Because you didn't have intention to do that. Ve'im nishapich. Let's say you turned in midair. Basically, you sort of managed to maneuver yourself as you're falling, right? You managed to maneuver yourself in order to land. Let's just see that in a moment. Chayev, you're liable af al haboshes. Even on this embarrassment payment, right, this extra payment for embarrassment, d'tanya, because we taught in a braisa, mimashma, we're going to infer this, shene'emar, from the verse that says as follows, v'sholcho yodo, that she, okay, one second, this is Sholcho Yoda. Okay, so this is also a great case. This is a posik though, by the way. So let's say, Ki Yinotsuana, I'll read the full verse. Ki Yinotsuana Hashem, two men are fighting. Yachtov Ish Ve'ochiv, right? Two people. I don't think it means a brother, particularly in this case, one man and his fellow. Ve'korvo Isha So'echod, the wife of one of them comes along. Lahadzil Es Isha, to save her husband. Miad Makehu, from someone who is, from this fight, basically. She grabs hold of his private area, right, in order to in order to prevent this fight, to stop this fight. But actually, she causes damage by doing so, right? So she causes damage by doing so. So that's what the pasuk says. The Gemara infers from there, v'sholcho yodo, right? Ein yodeh shehechaziko. Why does it say v'sholcho yodo v'hechaziko? It's like a double language. It says she sends her hand, i.e. she sort of, you know, she hits him and grabs hold of him. So why is it the double expression, this double language? Surely if she's doing one, she's doing the other. Ma Talmud lomar, why are we saying v'hechaziko? Why is it adding that on? Lomar lecho, to tell you, kiven sheniskaven lehazik, since she intended to cause damage, af al pisha lo niskaven levayish. So what we're saying over here, and the same thing would be in our case, that if you're turning in midair, it doesn't mean that you're doing it in order to cause embarrassment to this person. What it means is that you're doing it in order to damage, right? You're intending to damage. So let's say I'm swinging something in the air and cause you damage. So what the Gemara is saying over here is I'm swinging it in the air. I'm clearly negligent. Shouldn't be doing this. I'm going to be liable for things, but I'm not going to be liable in embarrassment payment. But let's say I'm swinging it in the air and I see you and I sort of, you know, flick it out and it hits you. Then I would be liable for the embarrassment payment as well. Even though I'm not necessarily trying to embarrass you, but the fact that I'm intending to damage you, that's what makes you liable for the embarrassment payment. So again, the person who's falling off the roof, if they're clearly maneuvering in midair to try and land directly on this other individual, then they're going to be liable for the embarrassment payment as well. And Rashi says that it's niskaven linpol al ha'odam lahana oso. The main thing is that you're intending to land on the person for your own benefit. It's important because it doesn't sound like you're doing it just for the sake of... It's not like a vindictive thing. You're not doing it just to... Let's say you're doing it to break your fall. But you're still doing it in a way that is clearly going to cause damage to a person, and you're doing it intentionally, right? So you're doing it... you're using the other person's body in a way which is causing them damage for your own personal benefit. So it doesn't mean that you have to want to hurt them. It just means that you are wanting to do something to them that's going to be for your benefit. Okay. Fine. So as I say, amazing cases. Okay, and we got some more. So for Omar Rabbah, we're about 10 lines from the end of the perek, or 12 lines from the end of the perek. For Omar Rabbah, hiniach lo gacheles al libo, vomes. So you put a coal on top of the person's heart. Again, I don't know exactly. However, the biology of this death is working. Clearly, it's causing some sort of death, but it's causing it over time. Right? It doesn't happen immediately. It's not an immediate thing. What does the Gemara say? You're potter. You're exempt. Why are you exempt from the death penalty? Because Rashi spells it out, but it should be obvious. Shehoyelo salka, right? The person could have removed it. You put something there. Yes, it began to cause damage, but the fact that they left it there was what actually killed them, right? They could have easily removed what they want. My brain went to these sort of like James Bond scenarios a little bit, you know, where you set up this overly complicated way of killing somebody and then you walk away so they can run away if they want, or you, I guess, in a way that is easy enough for them to actually leave at that point, right? They don't need to we'll see if it's impossible for them to leave, right? Let's say you all these crazy scenarios, you put someone in a box, you know, filled with water, and you close the lid, they can't get out, right? So even though it happens over time, clearly then you would be liable to death penalty, right? That's not what we're talking about over here. And I think the Gemara spells that out, or at least one of the Roshonim does. The Gemara says it in just a moment. But in this particular case, you're exempt, right? Again, you're a bad person. The Gemara's not saying you should do this, but from the technical death penalty, there's an exemption over here. Al bigdo v'nisraf chayev, but you're still liable for the shirt, right? The burn on the shirt, because that was more direct. There, you know, that happened immediately. That's something that went on straight away. Okay, Omar Rova. This is Rova, not Rabba, different person. Rova says tarvaihu. Tininohi.
Sorry, how do you tell it's Rava and not Rava?
Good question. Rava is with an aleph at the end, and Rabba is with a hey at the end. Yeah. So yeah, Rava has a hey at the end. Rava is with a good question. Rava with an aleph. Tarvaihu Tananhi. So these two halachas that Rabbah taught are already in a Mishnah, right? We have a Mishnah as well, both Al Libo. So the one that says that he put the coal on his heart, and that was what caused the death over time. Ditnan, as the Mishnah says, Kovash Olov Lesoch Haur. Let's say you pushed someone directly into a fire, or into water, as I said earlier, same thing. If he can't get out, then vomes, and he dies as a result of that, chayef, then you're liable to death penalty. Absolutely, that's a full on murder, straight murder. Well, they're all murders, really, but in English. But for the death penalty, you are liable. But if you push someone into a fire, into water, they can get out of it, right, and survive. Again, might cause great damage, and you'd be liable for that. But the death wasn't necessary. But yet they still die, right? Umeis Potter, then you're exempt from the death penalty, right? You're exempt from the death penalty. Big dough, right? So that's the Mishnah that spells out Rabba's first case about putting the coal on the heart. What about the case that you're liable for the shirt, for the clothing? Big dough, ditanan, as it says in the Mishnah. Kora asks Susi, shavur eskadi. If you say to someone, tear my clothes, or break my jug, my vase, right? Chayev. You're still liable, even if you were instructed to do so. If I say to you, please break this, even though I told you to do it, again, presumably it's in a case where it's clear that that they really didn't want to. I guess, I don't know, I guess we'll have to, it'd be interesting to come up with some scenarios as to where that would apply. But al menos lifter, then you would be putter, right? So if you do it, if the owners don't spell out that you're going to be exempt, then you would be liable. But if they spell out that you're going to be exempt, then you would be exempt, right? Because it's clear that they don't mind, right? It's clear that they don't mind. Okay, so not sure why that's the I see. I guess the point is that the owner didn't remove this coal from their shirt, so maybe that's like an implicit showing that they didn't really care about it. But you're still liable in that case, right? We said you're liable. I think it's probably liable for the initial damage that's done, right? Fine. Okay. So that's those are the two Mishnahs that seem to spell out Rabba's two cases. And again, we'll end off with I don't know if it's definitely not the craziest of the bunch, but certainly in our in our world, this obviously wouldn't apply at all. But in recognizing the halacha of an eved, which we've talked about a number of times, obviously this is a different sort of halachic category. Bo'i Rabba, so this is now Rabba asking a question. Okay, he doesn't say this as a definite, but he's asking, what's the halacha? Hiniach gacheles al leiv avdo. Let's say you put the coal in this particular scenario on your servant, right? Mahu, what's the halach? So you put the coal on your servant. Now, and again, the assumption is that they die as a result of it, right? But in theory, they could have removed it. So do we say mahu? What do you say? Kagufo domi, right? They say it's like you're doing it on yourself, right? And not on your servant. You put it on somebody else's servant, right? You put it on someone else's servant. So do we say that you're exempt from the death, not liable to death penalty, because the owner could have come along and removed it, Right? The owner could have come along and removed it. Oka mamono domi. Or do we say, no, it's like the case of the shirt.
Or is it because the slave is a chattel?
And therefore?
Like the clothes.
There's no question that the slave is being considered property here either way. The question is whether the fact that the owner didn't come across. Let's make it a stronger scenario. Let's say the servant is tied up, right? But the owner is standing there. So if the owner chooses, the owner can untie the servant and save them, right? So do we say? So does the fact that the owner is standing by and not doing anything about it, does that show? Basically, what the Gemara had said was that with regards to a shirt.
Would it be for the
Eved
to take the coal off his own heart?
So that's what it says. So let's say he can't.
So he can't.
Presumably he can't. Okay, so we're talking about we're clearly talking about a scenario where the onus is on the owner, right? The expectation is on the owner to do it. The owner is the one who's able to save this slave or not, right? To save this slave or not, and the question is. Is the slave more similar to a person not saving themselves, right? Or is the slave more similar to a person not saving their property, right? Their shirt. In the case where you don't save your shirt, we say that the person is still liable, right? Even though you didn't remove the coal from your shirt. But where you could have removed the coal from yourself, you're exempt from the death penalty. So is the death of the slave more similar to not doing that for your own body or for your own property? Imtim Salomar, perhaps you could suggest kugufodom, it's like your body, right? So shoromahu. So if that's the case, then what would happen if you did it onto an animal? Let's say you put a coal onto an animal's heart, onto someone else's animal's heart. And again, in a case where they're tied up and the animal can't move. But the owner could move. The owner could save the animal, right? The owner could save the animal, but doesn't save the animal. So there, what's the halacha, right? So what's the halacha? Same sort of question, or similar sort of question, right? Does that mean that you're going to be liable in that case or exempt? I would have thought that one was a bit more straightforward. But okay. Hodar Pashta. So initially he asked it as a question and he wasn't sure, but then he concluded and he actually did come up with the solution, and he thinks that this is the halach according to Rabbah. Avdo kugufo. So it would be like your your own body, right? You should view the Eved like your own body. But Shoro kamamono, but your animal would be like your property. They're clearly both property in this, you know, this halachic scenario. But in a sense, you sort of you're expected to look after the Eved like your own body, and therefore the fact that you didn't remove it in this particular case shows would exempt the person who did it from the death penalty. But shoro kamamono, and therefore you'd be liable for the death of the animal. Okay, as I say, all of these things are very theoretical scenarios, but I think they do show an approach. I think, you know, certainly it's interesting to see at the end, you know, that concept of the kugufa, right? That you were certainly expected to look after in the same way that, in a sense, you know, the fact that the coal would be on your servant's heart is as though it's on your own heart, right? It's the same same thing. Hadron aloch ketzad aregel. Finished two whole parokim. Okay, we've come to the end of the second chapter. Very, very fascinating stuff. Very fascinating gemaras. Okay, well done, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I'm in the recording there, but I'll just...